Now it's Food Friday with a focus on desserts. In her new book, our next guest has recipes for all tastes and skill levels, from super simple desserts you can whip up in 5 minutes to others that take 12 hours or more. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite dessert to make? What is your favorite dessert to have other people make for you? Do you like to stick with simple recipes or venture into more complicated ideas? Do you tend to eat dessert at some point in the day? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Clara Saffitz is a recipe developer and author. She wrote the cookbook Dessert Person. Her newest book is What's for Dessert? Simple Recipes for Dessert People. Claire, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Now, I like dessert, Claire, but you really like dessert, eating it and making it. What is it about dessert that's so magical?
I mean, besides the fact that I just love sweet flavors and I love, you know, all desserts of all kinds, I feel like it is, for me, a form of self-care. I just love treating myself to something sweet after dinner or even after lunch or just any time of the day. And it's just a sort of a moment for me to treat myself and give myself kind of a lovely gift. So for many different reasons, but I'm also just, I just have a sweet tooth. So that's a big part of it.
And you write that in your head, dessert equals baking. And there's a lot of baking in your book, but you also push the boundaries some. What were you, in this new book, what were you trying to expand your horizons to?
Yeah, I've always been a baker. I've always loved to bake. And so for me, that was my definition of dessert for so long. It was a cake or a cookie or something like that. But in this book, I really wanted to sort of broaden my own horizons as a dessert person. So I explore many different categories of desserts, things like chilled and frozen desserts, things like desserts you can make on the stovetop, so puddings and rice pudding and things like that. So I really tried to branch out and explore many different types of desserts. And for me, this book is a way to cater to the tastes of all different kinds of dessert people, not just myself.
And part of that is, and I love this in the book, you have sort of difficulty levels, ratings for all the recipes in the book as far as how long they take. That's pretty normal. But also just like, these ones are easy, these are less so. Why was that important to you to share with readers?
Yeah, for the most part, the difficulty level of all of the desserts in the book are on the kind of easier side. They're more to kind of one side of the spectrum. But there is still some variation. So it's really important to me as a recipe developer that the home baker understands the kind of buy-in and the commitment that they're making up front when they are attempting a recipe. So I try to be very transparent about the difficulty level to sort of give people all the information they need to know that this is a super quick and simple recipe. This one's going to take a little bit longer. You know, this one needs to chill overnight. So it's just about kind of arming the home baker with as much info as possible before they start cooking.
Now, I'm more of a cook than a baker. And you actually talk about people who have some levels of baking anxiety. They're worried that they're going to screw up this careful chemical process. Share some words of reassurance to those of us in that situation before we get rolling on one of these recipes.
Yeah, I completely understand anxiety in the kitchen, whether it's cooking or baking or both. So I try to assuage that anxiety. I tell people there's kind of psychological tips for approaching a recipe with less fear. And then there's also kind of practical ones. So I completely understand the apprehension in the kitchen. You've invested time and money and ingredients and you want it to turn out. And with baking, it's a little bit of a more mysterious process. So I tell people to do things like visualize the steps in the recipe, you know, pull out the pan that you're going to need, things like that, because just small little steps, I think, can really sort of break the seal on a recipe and make it just feel more approachable and easier to begin, because it can be a little bit overwhelming when you're just looking at all the steps on the page and all the ingredients. So I try to give little helpful tips like that throughout the book.
It is a special dessert edition of Food Friday. Claire Saffitz is with us. Her newest cookbook is called What's for Dessert? Simple Recipes for Dessert People. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about how to make something maybe you've encountered elsewhere? Do you have a favorite dessert that you love to make and or eat? Do you have a recipe that you've tried and it just didn't work out quite right? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. By the way, Claire shared a few recipes from the book with us. You can find them at WPR.org/Food Friday. Two sound great to me. One, I'll probably never eat. Okay, I can't leave that hanging, Claire. What are the recipes that some people love? Grapefruit. That's great. I don't. But these bars sound super interesting. No bake grapefruit bars. Tell us a little bit about this. And there's a reason to not bake that grapefruit, it sounds like.
Yeah, I'm a grapefruit lover. We are in the middle of citrus season. So this is the time of year where we get all these beautiful citrus fruits in the market. And I love grapefruit because it has such a piercing flavor. And I love that kind of tart bitterness. But I found in all of my recipe testing that if you try to bake it, if you heat up that the juice or the segments, it really drains a lot of the flavor. So this is a perfect no-bake recipe. It's very similar to kind of a no-bake cheesecake. It has cream cheese in the filling, has lots of fresh grapefruit juice and grapefruit zest. And so it's really easy to put together. It has a kind of sturdy graham cracker crust. And you just chill the filling. So it's a kind of a fun, slightly different spin on a sort of lemon cheesecake, but great for wintertime. And I love that it has this really fresh, bright flavor. And then it's finished with segments of grapefruit on top. So you get that kind of juiciness from like the fresh fruit itself. So, you know, I think in wintertime, we struggle to find inspiration. It's like we're not getting, you know, at least in the Northeast where I live, I'm not getting lots of, you know, beautiful produce in the market. So I turned to citrus to kind of brighten up all my desserts.
Now let's imagine a hypothetical person who liked every kind of citrus in the world except grapefruit. Could he or she substitute in other citrus for grapefruit in this recipe?
You could use any orange, I think would be great. Like Cara oranges are really special, or tangerines.
Ooh, I like those.
Satsuma tangerines are so incredibly delicious and have tremendous flavor. So yeah, any other citrus that you like to eat out of hand would be great.
You can find that No Bake Grapefruit Bar at WPR.org/Food Friday. Another thing I love about the book, Claire, is that, you know, when you can get fresh fruit, great, you can use that, but you're not a snob. Frozen fruit could be fine. Instead of making your own jam for the recipe, store-bought, you are no opponent of convenience.
Not at all. I tried to, in this book, to really sort of pinpoint and hone in on particular store-bought products that were going to not only be easier, but be even better than the homemade version. So I think if the thing you can buy at the store is as good or better than what you can make at home, then I'm definitely using the store-bought version. So things like ladyfingers or Oreo cookies that you crush up and add to a filling, jam is a great example. So certainly that's the case. And while I love cooking with fresh fruit, often frozen is even better. So if you're making a cake with blueberry or muffins, frozen blueberries tend to be even better than fresh. So I try to, that's really in an effort to provide maximum flexibility in the recipe. So I say if you can't find fresh, frozen is perfect.
And that reminds me, you give a few different levels of gear to have, like from, hey, we're going to dabble in dessert making from time to time, to we are a dessert kitchen here. What are a couple of the basics, though, that if people are going to make some desserts, you suggest having around?
Yeah, I mean, you don't need a fully outfitted kitchen with every kind of pan, you know, in your whole baking repertoire all at once. So I do give levels. And I think for kind of the casual baker or someone who's just starting out and stocking a kitchen, maybe like a recent college grad or, you know, someone in their first apartment, I say get a couple of anodized aluminum pieces of bakeware. So this is a light colored pan. They lead to really even baking. So get a 9-inch cake pan and an 8-inch square pan. These are going to be things that you use over and over and over again. A loaf pan is another one. But you don't need, you know, you don't necessarily also need a bundt pan and a 10-inch cake pan and all these different things. So I like to sort of invest in those, the most heavily used things first, and then you can kind of go from there.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jacob is with us in Madison. Jacob, hi.
Yeah, hi. Since you already talked about making a substitution in lemon cheesecake and substituting out grapefruit, what I've done is when I ran out of lemons to make lemon meringue pie, I made grapefruit meringue pie, and that's really delicious.
And Jacob, I got to ask, since Claire talked about baking being bad for grapefruit, did the grapefruit bake at any point in this equation?
No, the juice is part of the, basically the pudding.
Part of the meringue, kind of.
Yeah, so it doesn't affect the flavor any more than the lemon does in a lemon meringue pie.
Excellent. Jacob, I love it. I wouldn't love the grapefruit part, but I love the idea. Claire, what do you think?
I think that's great. I have successfully made grapefruit curd, so which is similar to the filling of a, you know, a citrus meringue pie. So it can definitely be done. But I've just found that, you know, fresh grapefruit and fresh citrus flavor in general works really well. But I love using sort of more unexpected citrus in place of lemon. I mean, I'm a huge lemon desserts fan as well. Mm-hmm. But I love that. I love that experimentation.
Jacob, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And thanks, Jacob, for the easy transition to our next recipe. He mentioned meringue. You've got meringue in a place I don't expect to find it. I love flourless chocolate cake. Well, you've got a flourless chocolate meringue cake. What's going on with that, Claire?
Yeah, this cake I love for a few different reasons. It's great because it fits a number of kind of dietary restrictions. So this cake is grain-free, gluten-free. It has almond flour in it. It's also dairy-free. So it's great to bring to like parties or gatherings or events like that if you're concerned about any kind of dietary restrictions. But typically flourless chocolate cake is lightened with beaten egg whites. So that is what is helping to give the cake its kind of lift. It doesn't have any flour in it. And in this version, I actually make more meringue than I need for the cake itself. And then I take that leftover meringue and I swirl it into the surface. And what I love about that technique is it creates this kind of crunchy, light meringue-like lid on the surface. And then it kind of gives way to this, you know, really moist, kind of tender chocolate cake underneath. And so it creates this great textural experience. And what I love about this recipe is that you're not doing an extra step. You're just making the cake as you normally would, but just kind of thinking about it in a different way and maximizing all those different components. So you get this beautiful swirled crunchy top. So a great kind of celebration cake. People love chocolate. Great for this time of year. So that is also one of my kind of go-to entertaining recipes.
It's Food Friday. We're talking with recipe developer and author Claire Saffitz about her new cookbook. It's called What's for Dessert? Simple recipes for dessert people. Are you a dessert person? Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite dessert to make? What do you like to make and or eat this time of year? Is there a dessert that you have struggled with that's been a challenge for you? Maybe Claire could help you overcome that. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Find three recipes from Claire, by the way, at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday conversation with Claire Saffitz, recipe developer and author. Her newest cookbook is called What's for Dessert? And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's for dessert for you tonight or this weekend? Do you have some plans for baked or other desserts? Do you have questions for our guest about how to make something? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Darlene is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I have a love-hate relationship with cheesecakes. I love cheesecakes, but whenever I've ventured out to make one, they always end up dense or gloopy. Any suggestions on how to get on the right track with a cheesecake?
Oh, interesting, Darlene. Thanks. I like a good high-density cheesecake. Claire, but how could she lighten it up a little?
Yeah, I have actually a similar love-hate relationship and it's not so much about the making, it's more about the eating. Sometimes I find with a New York-style cheesecake where you have a ton of filling, it can just be very one note. So I like to actually decrease the amount of filling in my cheesecake so I have a little bit of a better proportion of crust to filling. So that might help to actually just sort of address some of those issues that you're having with the filling. But other than that, I would say to lighten it up, you can try increasing the number of eggs in your filling. So the more eggs, the more that filling will kind of souffle as it bakes and lighten up. You could also try adding some beaten egg whites into it. That would also sort of aerate the mixture and make it really light. But you might just try sticking with the recipe, but beating it longer with your mixer, whether that's your hand mixer or a stand mixer, to try to work some air into it. And then beyond that, it's just about kind of cooking it the right amount. So usually it's made in a water bath, which promotes really gentle cooking. And another common problem with cheesecake is cracking on the surface. this, and that can happen if the filling is baked either a little too much or is cooled down quickly. So you often see a tip in recipes to cool the cheesecake inside the oven with the door open. So that's another great tip, that the kind of gentle cooking and gentle cooling is really important for a successful cheesecake. But I would say, you know, as far as if it's a dense, gloopy filling, you're probably just not mixing it enough. So you want to really work some air into there. That's called mechanical leavening, and I think that should probably do the trick.
Darlene, thanks for the call. If you need somebody to help dispose of those failed cheesecakes, keep me in mind. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Karen joins us now in Reedsburg. Hi, Karen.
Hi. So my question for the marvelous dessert cooker is, I have two granddaughters that are allergic to both dairy and eggs. I'm wondering if your new cookbook offers any options for them.
Interesting. No dairy, no eggs, Claire. Any ideas for desserts?
Yeah, I have a couple of desserts in the book that are vegan. So no eggs, no dairy. It's actually easier to remove dairy than it is to remove eggs. So that can be a little bit of a challenge. But if you are looking to convert, if you already have a dairy-free recipe, for example, I have a couple of olive oil or otherwise oil-based cakes in the book. And so if you're looking to replace eggs in a recipe, a very common and useful trick is to make something called a flax egg, where you basically mix some ground flax with a little bit of boiling water, and that becomes a pretty effective egg replacement. So if you have a recipe for a loaf cake or just any other kind of cake that you like, that can be a really useful substitute. But as far as recipes in the book, I have some that are already vegan. I have a coconut rice pudding. So rice pudding is a super easy and incredibly delicious, comforting dessert. So I have one that's made with coconut milk rather than dairy milk. And it has like lychees on top, and it's infused with some tea that is trying to remember the recipe itself, with a jasmine tea. So it's this kind of really nice vanilla-y perfumed dessert. So there's that one. So and there's lots of other resources for vegan desserts online. I really recommend the cookbook author Erin Goyaga. Her book is Cannelle et Vanille.
I hope that helps you out, Karen. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. It's Food Friday. Talk to Claire Saffitz. Her newest cookbook is called What's for Dessert. Back to your calls now. Charlene is on the line in Eau Claire. Charlene, hi.
Hi. You did mention that you wanted people to call in just to talk about their favorite cheese mill desserts.
Yeah.
Did I hear that right?
You did.
Yeah. So there's this bread that I make, and I forget about it the whole year until the Christmas rolls around. And the official name, I found it, I don't even remember where I found it, called Gift of the Magi bread. And over time, and now it's just called Maggie bread by my family. But it's a banana bread base. And then you add maraschino cherries, chocolate chips, coconut, almond. It sounds like fruitcake, but it's delicious. It's not, you know, disgusting. And the weird ingredient is a can of mandarin oranges. And, like, the oranges explode in the bread and make it even moister than regular, you know, the bananas do. So and everyone I make it for, they've never heard of it. And I guess I'd also like to ask y'all if it's maybe just a strange Midwestern thing. It might have come from some church cookbook.
Maybe.
Everybody loves it.
Charlene, yeah. Thanks. Have you run into anything like that, Claire?
I've never heard of anything like that.
Me
that
either.
Uses a banana bread base, but then adds all of these other ingredients. It almost feels like a cake version of like ambrosia. It has a kind of real mid-century sound to it, which I really love. So I'm very intrigued to try it, but it kind of sounds like a winner. So I love the sound of that recipe.
Charlene, thanks so much for sharing that with us. We've got one more recipe you shared with us, Claire, up at WPR.org/Food Friday. Now, my number one dessert to make at home is a crisp, because it's really hard to screw up a crisp. You've got a cherry and brown butter buckwheat crisp. Tell us about this a little.
I totally agree. It is hard to screw up a crisp. I mean, generally with baking and with dessert making, there's very few recipes that don't involve some kind of technique. But I really think that a crisp is as foolproof as it gets when it comes to baking. So this is a great recipe because it uses frozen cherries. You could definitely use fresh in summertime if that's what you have. But with frozen cherries, there's no pitting necessary at all. And then you just make this kind of straightforward crunchy topping using buckwheat groats, which is the whole form of the grain. And you toast them in some brown butter. You add some buckwheat flour, an egg white to help bind everything together, and some brown sugar. And it's really easy. And it has this, I love that the topping stays really buttery, but also gets crunchy. And then you have this kind of lightly sweet, slightly lemony cherry filling. So it's kind of bright and fruit forward and a great dessert you can really make any time of the year.
And does buckwheat, I mean, I assume there's some texture there. Does it give some different flavor to the crisp part of the crisp?
Yeah, buckwheat is really earthy. And when you toast the groats in brown butter, it just creates this really complex, almost minerally kind of flavor. So, you know, it just is going to contribute a lot more flavor than just plain white flour, which is why I love it. So the earthiness really plays well against the cherries.
All right, I'm going to take a wild guess here in our last minute or so that you have plans to have dessert tonight and or over the weekend. So I'll ask you, what's for dessert?
I do. Every night, this is a question that I ask unironically to my husband, you know, even though most of the time I know the answer. So actually, just last night, speaking of banana bread, I made some banana bread because I had some old overripe bananas that were not getting any younger. They were, you know, in the freezer, just taking up space. So I made a kind of improvised banana bread. I put some toasted pecans in it, some cinnamon. I had some sour cream, so I used that, and it turned out great. So that is definitely, I had it last night for dessert. I'm having it again tonight. You can't go wrong with banana bread.
You can have it for breakfast, too.
My husband had it for breakfast, exactly, any time of the day.
Claire, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's Claire Saffitz, recipe developer and author. She wrote the cookbook Dessert Person, and she talked with us today on Food Friday about her newest book. It's called What's for Dessert? Simple Recipes for Dessert People, a baking book. You can find a few of the recipes that Claire shared with us online at WPR.org/Food Friday. That cherry and brown butter buckwheat crisp we were just talking about, no-bake grapefruit bars, and a flourless chocolate meringue cake. And you can share your favorite desserts, throw a recipe in there if you want to, online on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or let us know about your favorite desserts. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear what is going on in your kitchen in Dessertland.